Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome to another hour of inquiry, an hour dedicated to the discovery of illumination, an hour where we dare go wherever mind might take us in our search for enlightenment, an hour for the open-minded where the onset, we accept that our foregone conclusions may just all be wrong. And in that way, hopefully open ourselves up to the possibility of some new discoveries, some new insights, new possibilities, and even new potential horizons. Today's show promises to be really exciting, for we will probe the world of electronic voice phenomena, or EVPs, in the latest of our provocative inquiries. Electronic voice phenomena, also popularly known as ghost voices. Are they real? Is there any scientific criteria that, if applied, might corroborate the claims of paranormal investigators that these sounds are indeed voices from another dimension? Is there a protocol for recording this phenomena that, and doing so in such a way that it guards against fraud, misinterpretation, sound artifacts, and so forth? If I hear the voices, if I think I hear them, how do I know that what I hear isn't just a function of my own mind, a form of audio Rorschach, pareidolia? Do you remember the movie White Noise, which claims to be based on real phenomena, where voices from the dead are picked up on tape recording and radio equipment? Well, according to skeptics like James Randi, this so-called EVP phenomena is all one malevolent hoax. Malevolent, that's his word. In his words, quote, As always, there are plenty of gullible people who want to desperately believe in something this absurd. Now, people all over the country are turning on their recorders, hoping to make contact with their deceased and non-existent grandfathers by listening carefully to static transmissions, end quote. Now, you should probably know that the Randi Educational Foundation offers $1 million for proof that EVP are caused paranormally. Have you ever tried to record voices from another dimension? Did you see a TV show, a Discovery show, that discussed or showed how these voices were done? And did you set your recorders and go away and then listen to hours and hours of blank tapes? That ever happened to you? Have you had any success? Did you record a loved one? I've tried and tried again and again. I've bought expensive gear, advertised to do all this, and I've repeatedly failed. That said, a friend of mine, who is a very respectable neurosurgeon, John L. Turner, has had success, and he is one of my guests today. You know, I ask, do you have to believe or even possess some medium-like quality, like many say you do, before you're successful at capturing one of these recordings? I know what I think, but we want your opinions, ideas, and questions. You can join us now in our chat room by going to eldontaylor.com/chat or by calling toll-free 1-866-254-1579. And international callers can dial their country code, then 760-918-4300. Now first, before introducing my guest today, our letters. Every week I read a couple of your letters just as our way of acknowledging and paying homage to your contribution in making our show the success it is. Last week our guest was Harv Ecker, and we discussed exactly how limited thinking limits earning power. From his book, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, we decided that money will only make you more of what you already are. We further pronounced a new law. If you wish more prosperity in your life, solve more problems for more people. I love this way of looking at it. Harv also provided some free passes to our entire listening audience to one of his wealth-building seminars, a $1,200 deal. Okay, Diana wrote, quote, I love your show and listen every week. Thank you for the free tickets to the Millionaire Mind Intensive Seminar. Karen wrote, thank you, Eldon. Appreciate your gift. I have Hay House on right now. Always great shows that encourage independent thinking coupled with spirituality. Well, thank you, Karen. Now, I'd like to cover more letters with you today, especially those that disagreed with last week's show, and we did get one of those. But we'll have to save that for another show. We have two guests and several sound clips to play today, so that's all the time we're going to take for letters. Still, I want you to know that I do read your letters. They do matter, and I invite you to share your thoughts and ideas with me by leaving comments on my website or by becoming a friend on Facebook. Please do opine. Now, joining us today is my good friend, Dr. John L. Turner, author of the wonderful book, and it is a great book, Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations. Dr. Turner is a distinguished neurosurgeon. You can find him all over the internet, as well as a true investigator of life beyond death. Dr. Turner has been with us before. His interviews are in our archives. So let me introduce you to our second guest. David Rowntree has been scientifically researching paranormal phenomena since 1976. He has a master's in electrical engineering with focus on digital signal processing, is a certified audio engineer and a member of the Audio Engineering Society, and is a professional member of the Ryan Research Center. He is the director and chief science advisor of Scientific Paranormal Investigative Research Information and Technology, a privately funded research laboratory. He is currently working on a doctorate in physics, and I can tell you from my pre-interview with David, this man is all about science. So, gentlemen, Dr. Turner and Mr. Rowntree, welcome to Provocative Enlightenment.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thank you, David and Eldon.
Now, before we get started, I should let everyone know that playing these sound clips, and we will be doing that today, playing them on the air is not the best way to hear them. So what we've done is we've placed all of the clips on my website, and you can go to the website, eldentaylor.com, click or choose the link Provocative Enlightenment, and there you'll find them all, and you can study them and listen to them to your heart's content. That said, we hope that we'll be able to get some real quality out across the air today so everyone can hear just exactly what these voices are like. So to begin with, let's start with you, Dr. Turner. Please tell us, because I love this story, how you became involved in recording your first EVP and what happened then, or as my mother might say, what can of worms did that open for you?
Well, hopefully that's what we'll be talking about, because I would like your opinion, and David's and your listeners, about what really happened and how this all came to be. And as a result of the story I'm going to tell you briefly, this is why we're talking today. And it's about my friend Martin. His name is Martin Simmons, who lives in London, England. And I met Martin 12 years ago when we were both interested in remote viewing. And at that time, the only thing way I could train in remote viewing was with Dr. Courtney Brown at the Farsight Institute. So I met Martin through that, and we became good friends over the years. We both trained in remote viewing under Ed Dane. And then as Martin realized that I had a book in progress, and as you mentioned, the book is Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations, about my experiences in Hawaii as a neurosurgeon, Martin volunteered to do the website for me, which is johnlturner.com. And a beautiful website. He worked very hard at this. And once we had it up and going, November 25th, a year ago, suddenly we received an email from Mr. Rob Smith in Australia. And it was very enigmatic. It said, basically, Doctor, I've seen your website, and now I know you understand what's taken up the last 5 years of my life, something called EVP. Now, David and Eldon, for me, that's the first time I really heard of EVP. I recalled seeing frequency many years ago with Dennis Quaid. You guys remember that one, right?
Right.
Well, for a strange reason, I didn't recall even what it was about. I hadn't paid much attention to it. But I wrote to Martin. I said, listen, Martin, check out this website. Here is a way to perhaps establish communication with those who have passed on to the other side of the veil, so to speak. And since you're an electronic computer guy, I bet you'll be interested. And he said, absolutely. So I said, let me begin to research what is this thing called the afterlife, and is there a way to get in touch? So what happened next? I would say within a week or two, Martin wrote me to say, look, doctor, I've got this pain in my right side. It's a funny, sharp pain. What do you think? And I tell you, 2 months later, I was in London. He had had surgery for cancer of the colon, the voice phenomena, and it also could be called telephonic voices or direct radio voices. And basically, as you mentioned, Eldon, that movie White Noise was kind of popular because it was thought or taught that right. there are entities that can use this kind of a white noise, this frequency noise, to produce something.
Jack,
that can, yes?
Can I ask you to speak up just a little?
Yes. How about this, Eldon?
Hey, there we go.
Much better.
Yeah, I was becoming ghost for a little while. I'm sorry. It brought me back.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
White noise. It was felt that there was a necessary need to have some type of background noise in order for these entities to use that to make something intelligible to us. For example, Rob Smith would often use the crowd babble noise, and there are the loops that you can get of a Brazilian crowd babble and all this meaningless stuff that somehow they feel is formed into a voice. Well, then I came across something called radio sweeping, in which you can modify a radio to sweep the frequencies, AM or FM, very rapidly, so fast you really don't get real distinct words, but somehow it's felt that this is used to form these utterances. So I got back, and I tried that, and you can see on my website a way that you can hack a Radio Shack radio, cutting a couple of wires, and put it back together, and suddenly it'll begin to sweep on its own. So I got back, and I set that all up, Eldon and David, and for the first time, I said, let me just see, and I turned on the speakers, I turned on a digital recorder, and then I made a request, and I tell you, the request was simply, Martin, is that you? And I made this in general, out there to what people would call the ether or something, to see what would come through. And if you could cue up clip number one, we'll see the response.
Yeah, I'll play clip number one now, and I'm going to ask you to remember your radio voice, please, sir.
All right.
You're going to sleep on me, all right? Here we go.
Hey, Martin, is that you? Martin, is that you?
Hello? Hello?
Hey, Martin, is that you? Martin, is that you?
Hello? Hello?
You want to hear it again,
David,
Jack?
I've switched phones. Is this a little better voice?
No, you're actually softer.
Wait, I'm sorry.
You were real good there when you came up, so.
Well, I don't know exactly what it is, but this is the best I can do. I'll try to speak louder. Can you hear me now?
Well, yeah, but not as well as we did. You know, when I first asked you to speak up, you were loud and clear.
All right. Well, let's try this. Getting back to that clip. I asked the question, Martin, is that you? And the results I hear may be different than what you hear. How about you, David? What did you hear in that clip?
It's very difficult, excuse me, for me to tell because, of course, the sound quality of it isn't really good enough for me to really analyze it acoustically over the connection that we have. But it definitely seemed like there was a response to your voice.
Okay, well, let me tell you then, and this leads up to what we're going to discuss. Let me tell you what I hear. And then if Eldon will play that, we'll see if you then hear it. I think you'll hear within a second or two in the static a quick hello, and then followed by another hello in a British accent. Try that again, please, Eldon.
All right, same clip. Here we go.
Hey, Martin, is that you? Martin, is that you?
Hello? Hello?
Hey, Martin, is that you? Martin, is that you?
Hello? Hello?
Well, to me, I hear that hello pretty clearly.
I do, too. I do, too.
Well, once you said what it is, then, of course, I automatically heard it.
All right. That's what we're going to discuss. No, but here's the thing. That happened right away, my first attempt, and I played that clip for his wife, for my wife, and his friends who knew him well, and they couldn't believe it. They said that's his exact voice, the way he answers the phone. All right. Well, at that point, I stopped. And I said, before I do this anymore, let me find out what am I doing. And on my website, if you do a search for the word Martin, you'll find the information of how this was done. And I do put a caution out there. For people that want to try this, I said, if you go to the book Operators and Things by Barbara O'Brien, another book by Wilson Van Dusen called The Presence of Other Worlds, you'll realize that sometimes what might creep in may not all be wine and roses. So you have to approach this carefully. So after studying a little bit and trying to find out, well, what is this all about, I came across the pioneers such as Jurgensen, 1903, 1987, and he first hooked up a tape recorder for his own singing, and then he used a microphone and just set it up and let the thing record, and he left spaces because he started hearing voices, and they spoke in various languages, Swedish, German, Russian, Italian, all languages that Jurgensen knew and he could speak. And this led to what's called the Jurgensen frequency. He found that 1485 kilohertz may be the optimal way to set his radio. And then later, Radova did his experimentation, and he confirmed Jurgensen's results. So all of these people have done this noise-generated type of stuff. Well, then I returned, and I tried it again weeks later. And if you play clip two, I asked another question. Setting it up, I said, Martin, are you there? Now, this
okay,
is a little difficult
go.
To hear the response, but give it a try.
All right, here we go.
Martin, are you there? Martin, are you there?
Well, even I couldn't hear that.
Martin, are you there? Martin, are you there?
One of the problems, of course, with playing these clips across the air is that in order not to over-modulate, you know, what you end up trying to do is amplify them, and there is some distortion as a result of that. Right. I don't hear it here either,
okay,
Jack.
Okay, well, let me explain. Your listeners can hear it on the clips you've queued up on the website, but what we hear coming through as a response is that's the question. And I think when you can hear it clearly with headphones, you'll hear that. So then the question was, well, look, with radio sweeping, was there a possibility that you just picked up those three words and this is what you wanted to hear? Charles Tart was asked about radio sweeping, and he said, I think it's just these random words that come through. That's all it is. Well, as you know, Eldon, I waited several weeks later, and I met with you in Los Angeles, where we
right.
set this up with the cameras rolling. The same question I asked. And again, if you will play clip three where I've looped it for you, maybe you'll hear it this time coming through as the same thing. That's the question.
Okay, here we go.
I think you can hear a whispered, that's the question. Can you not?
You know, I'm going to cop out on that one because I don't hear that until you tell me what it is. And therein is my problem. But I do hear it once you tell me that is the question. Well, then I can make that out.
Okay, well, that leads into what I want to finish up with, the yeah. that you mentioned, right? Now, everyone recalls, and I don't know if Hoagland will agree, but the face on Mars may have been a case of visual pareidolia, right?
Right.
Because when I first saw that picture of the Cydonia region, it looked like a face to me. But then again, I've always wanted to see something happen on Mars, and that may be
yeah.
it. The Greek para means beside or alongside, and in the context of pareidolia, it means something faulty or something wrong. And in order to explain why I may be hearing Martin's response, because we had set this up, Martin agreed to contact me. This may be the explanation. I want to get your feeling. Can you play clip four, please?
We'll do it. I have to make an adjustment for this one because this gets just a little hot. Here we go.
Green Sally up, a green Sally down. Last time the stars got a tail to crown. Green Sally up. As green Sally down, left on the spot, got a tail to drown. Green Sally up, as green Sally down. Green Sally up, as green Sally down.
Okay, now here's the point with this. I think David and Eldon, you're familiar with that movie Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yes.
And
it was first came out in 1974. This is from the redo in year 2000 with Nicolas Cage. And for those of listening who may not know, you remember the song Mustang Sally, connected with Mustangs. And then in the movie, there was a Ford GT they called Eleanor, one of the movies that was stolen in 60 seconds. So people who like that movie, when they hear this song, they hear certain words. And Those words, before you play it again, Eldon, are bring Sally up, bring Sally down, lift and squat, going to tear the ground. Do you mind please playing that briefly once more time to make sure we hear that?
Not at all. Here we go.
Bring Sally up, bring Sally down, lift and squat, gotta tear the ground. Bring Sally up, bring Sally down, lift and squat, gotta tear the ground.
All right, so would you be in agreement with that?
Yes, without a doubt.
And you too, David?
Well, I'm going to say yes for the purpose of going along with it. However, I know that this isn't the case.
Yes,
all
well,
right,
so
then
do
let's
I.
Find out. Let's find out, gentlemen. Can you please pick you up for B?
This yeah, here you go. Are you ready?
B. Yes.
Oh, Miss Lucy, dead and gone. Left me here to weep and moan.
That's good. Now,
okay.
Here's my point with this. When you watch that movie, this song begins the movie with some very good visual effects showing the life of Nicolas Cage as a young fellow. Very well done. The song is very well, and it's surround sound, it sounds great. However, the actual words to that song, as David probably knows, are very different. And actually, the actual words go like this. Green, the word G-R-E-E-N, Sally up, green Sally down, let's done start, gotta till the ground. And what that is, it's from a song that is felt to be in a slave song of the slavery days. Sally stands for a part of a sallow or willow tree that's used as a switch or a whip. So you can get the meaning of green Sally up and green Sally down as that green willow stick used as a whip for picking cotton. And it says, let's done start, gotta till the ground. And it's actually from a song by Mary Gardner and Jesse Lee Pritcher on the Sounds of the South album. However, those who want to associate that song with that car theft and all that, fast cars, are going to hear something entirely different. And that's that pareidolia. And my last example of it, before we get into David's great research, is I'd like to show you what happened to another researcher friend of ours who would do more pure EVP recording without the noise, without a lot of static. And I'd like you to please play clip 5, where you're going to hear something that may be recognizable.
Okay, here we go.
Now, those are just two words that come through, and David Eldon has heard this, but David, what do you make of that one?
Well, again, the connection that I have doesn't allow me to make a precise identification of what I hear, and I'm very careful not to identify something I hear until I can do that.
Exactly.
I can see where that sound, though, the way it is assembled phonetically, you could make out several different things from that sound.
Okay. This is what the investigator thought it said. The two words, we know, like we know. And if you can hit that one more time and follow it with the final clip, the number.
Yeah,
six.
We've got, here we go. I'm going to give it to you quick because we've got about 30 seconds.
All right.
So I think we'll hold it there on suspense. So I can hear the we know, especially when you suggest that. But I think I could hear it before. But we have a hard break coming up. So, like I say, we'll just keep everybody in suspense. You're listening to Provocative Enlightenment on Hay House Radio, the only station to tune to. My guests are discussing voice recordings from another dimension. Ghost voices, if you will. You can follow the links under Provocative Enlightenment on EldonTaylor.com to their websites and more. Be sure you check out our archive files of the show later so that you can replay these sound files that we're introducing to you today. We'll be right back after these words from our friends.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome back. Before we get back to today's show, I want to remind you to do join us in the chat room. My partner, Ravinder, is here in the studio with me today, and she's tending to that chat room. And, you know, I was remiss in the setup to the show. I didn't get her to say her lines, and so I'm going to get her to say hello to everybody right now. Ravinder.
Hi, everyone. Do come join us in the chat room. We're having some interesting conversations going on in there, and I enjoy hearing everyone's feedback to the actual recordings as they're playing on the air.
Yeah. Well, and we'll get to those and some of the questions out of the chat room before the show's over. All right. I want to remind you that Hay House Radio may be the best-kept secret on the Internet. I've heard that line, but we're not trying to keep it a secret. So if you like the programming, be sure to tell your friends and everyone else about it. Okay, if you just joined us, I'm Eldon Taylor, and I'm speaking with Dr. John L. Turner and David Roundtree about electronic voice phenomena. Just before we went to break, we played a clip, a woman's voice clip, and we opened up this conversation about pareidolia. Pareidolia, you know, I guess a lay way of looking at that is you can take syllables and only hear certain syllables, and the mind wants to put them together and make sense out of them. So from a piece of this word or a piece of that sound, we form sentences in our mind. We begin to believe that we hear something being said that really isn't there. You've run into that, David, because your work is, you know, based solidly on how these voices are indeed formed. Why don't you pick it up there and tell us what you do that keeps the rigor of science into the collection of this EVPs, ITCs, etc.
Well, first of all, I mean, there's a classification system that's out there, like a class A, a class B, a class C type of electronic voice phenomena. And personally, I think that's all hogwash. You either understand what it is or you don't. And if you don't understand it, you have interesting noise, but that's really what it is. The litmus that I use before I do analysis is I will play the unaltered soundbite to five different people without them knowing the content, and I don't say a word to them about it, and they tell me what it says. If all five of them tell me the same thing, I've got a pretty good idea that I've got an EVP. And at that point, I start, you know, spending more time on the actual analysis of the sound file itself. So to me, the litmus test would be to get five different people who don't know, or don't know each other even really, to confirm content, and that kind of tells you it's not pareidolia. And, of course, it's also a challenge to get five different people to actually hear what's there, because their mind and their makeup physiologically is different too, which may allow nuances to creep in. So you have
like
to modify it a slight bit and say if it's... Right.
I'm sorry, I say like trying to get five people to see the same image in a Rorschach.
Right, and it's very difficult. However, there are good similarities. And in this particular field, when you start talking about reproducing experiments, you look for the common denominators in those things. And if you have three or four points that are common, you know, then that's close enough to warrant, you know, further investigation on it. And unfortunately, we don't have standards established in the field or a ruling agency, so we have to kind of do this on our own. But, yeah, and 90% of the things that we encounter, of course, are noise. It's noise that's very compelling and very interesting, but it still is defined as noise. On the other hand, when you actually do get a good, clear, concise recording of something that appears to be an intelligible voice, it definitely stands out from that noise floor when you're doing the actual recording. So it's quite easy to pick it out.
So what you're saying to us now, just by way of clarification, is that you actually collected some of these recordings. You have indeed put them through this test, five individual people. They have met that criteria. You've also examined them for other possibilities as to how the words could have been formed, as in radio sweep. You could well have been segments of actual radio broadcasts. Or,
right.
You have taken all of this into consideration. Is that what
right.
you're saying?
We go into real deep detail. In other words, when we're doing the research, we don't just walk into a place with a microphone and a recorder. We walk in with an entire battery of test equipment so that we can monitor the actual environment during the process of trying to capture these files, these voice files. And that includes monitoring things like the conductivity of the air, the temperature, the barometric pressure. We also do RF spectrum analysis of the environment to make sure that we don't have any kind of bleed over from either commercial broadcasts or public service broadcasts or that sort of thing. So we try to eliminate any explainable cause for what we might be getting. And once we do this survey and we start to actually start to gather the evidence, we can eliminate some of it based on what's present or what isn't present, and then narrow down the field somewhat to try to get rid of the false positives. And there are a lot of things that can naturally cause these voices to occur. And so a concerted effort has to be made to eliminate those causes from the mix so that what you actually find has some kind of scientific weight to lend to the concept or the notion that these things are sort of a spontaneous generated file. And the interesting thing is they're not noise at all. I actually did a series of experiments over a period of time that has identified electronic voice phenomena, real electronic voice phenomena, as actually being an electromagnetic field that seems to spontaneously appear, which is made up of components of the audio spectrum. Only instead of it being sound, it's actually an electromagnetic field.
So you can see it as well as record it then?
Well, you can see it with instrumentation, yes.
Right, that's what I mean.
If you're using EMF detectors or a sensor and you're putting that into, say, an oscilloscope using a low-noise, high-gain amplification, you can actually see the waveform and you can compare that waveform to the sound file waveform that you capture. And generally speaking, they're a pretty direct match. The EMF waveform tends to be a little slightly lower level because it doesn't go through the amplification stages that the EMF goes through when you're recording it onto a recorder. But it's there nonetheless, and the actual waveforms match.
So you have time logs, obviously, where you can show the correlation is one-on-one. You could therefore maybe sit down and collect $1 million from Randy if you were a reasonable person and would actually listen to the information, huh?
I have no desire to go collect $1 million from Randy.
Did you bring, you got some clips. Have you got an example that you can share with our audience of the kind of recordings that you're capturing?
Absolutely. I mean, the first couple of recordings were taken in Virginia when I was investigating a house there, and I was actually running a different experiment looking for proof of a theory I have that this stuff actually comes through a type of wormhole or portal that's a dynamic opening that occurs. The first clip, 1A, was the first clip that we got, and it's partially intelligible, but there's a part of it that's very difficult to pick out. It's due to some interference that we were encountering. So if you could play 1A.
You got it. Here we go.
All right. It's very difficult to make that out.
Would it be someone's obviously here?
Be interesting to say. One of the drawbacks that we have in this environment is that we can't pick up the nuances of the recording well because of the fidelity of our connections.
Right, but if, you had
but if people actually go to the website and listen to 1A, it sounds somewhat like, and not to color someone's perception of it, what I got out of it was we are low on something and then a name, William. And a little while later, perhaps about 2 minutes later, we picked up the second file, which was 1B. If you want to go ahead and play that. See how that
right
comes
up
through. Yeah, it sounds like we are out of salt. William.
Sounds like Ramsa or something.
Yeah, it's really weird. The The other weird thing about EVP is it comes in all shapes, sizes, and flavors, and it can sound like anything from a whisper to something electronically generated. But the interesting thing about the salt that tied it all in was is the initiation of the event that we started to record was a telekinetic event of a salt shaker actually moving, a heavy pewter salt shaker moving across the table. And that's what got our attention to note what time everything was happening so that when we did the evidence review, we could look and see what was occurring when that actually happened. And most of our instrumentation, the readings on it just went like berserk. I mean, we were getting gamma radiation bursts. We were getting temperature fluctuations. We were getting drops in barometric pressure. We were getting all sorts of environmental changes, dramatic increases in ion counts, which led me to believe that something opened up to allow this to come in. I was using a direction finding device, which allows me to triangulate a source point to where this EMF is actually coming from. And it actually was appearing towards the center of the room about 3 feet off the floor and was just appearing from no particular source. And by comparing the level of EMF field strength, I was able to pinpoint the location of where it was actually appearing at. So this is something that just kind of like altered the environment, appeared, and then I recorded the electronic voice phenomena as a part of that phenomena.
Now, one of the arguments put forward by many of the researchers that are successful in finding EVPs when someone fails is that perhaps there is a mediumistic involvement. You say there was a psychokinetic energy that moved the salt shaker. Did you have a medium there? I mean, was there a medium?
No.
What brought that about?
No. I believe that was caused. Yeah, I believe that was caused by an extraordinarily high-level, low-frequency radiation of some kind.
So no one on your team was actually attempting to do that. It just happened.
No, and my team, when we go into the field, do not attempt to interact with anything going on. We are there basically as observers, and so we don't try to talk to anything. We don't try to stimulate it. We are there to observe and record, and not interact with anything that occurs. To me, that's the most objective way to gather the evidence. If we go in and start tampering with the environment, I think we could color what we're actually gathering. And it may be that you can't, and it's not possible, but at this phase of the research, I want to keep it as clean as possible. So we don't go in and interact. We go in and we monitor, and oftentimes we even leave the area and come back in and check on the data occasionally so that we're not even present to influence the readings at all. So we use a couple of different methodologies in the gathering of the evidence. But for the most part, we do not try to interact. We do not have a medium on the team when we do these investigations or someone with psychic abilities, at least openly known to us. So anything that we measure, we don't assume anything. We try to derive it from what we're seeing data-wise in the overall environment.
Okay, now, as a scientist, David, I have to ask you, some people seem to be able to collect these, and obviously, you've had success. And other people, trained people, seem to have absolutely no success at doing that. Is there an explanation for that? Would it have to do with locality? Does it have something to do with the belief or the expectation of the individual attempting? Is it the recording equipment? I mean, what kind of an answer would you give me to that?
Well, I think based on my experience with this, location has everything to do with it, and I think the person has very little to do with it. I mean, I don't have a psychic bone in my body. I mean, I have no innate abilities that I'm aware of, and I come in and I basically let the instrumentation do the work. I do very little after I set things up other than monitor it. What I have found, though, is location is very vital. These things tend to be present in areas where there is reported perceived paranormal activity. And I say perceived because we don't know for sure that that's what it is. We just don't understand what we're encountering. But this perceived activity, for example, I use the basement of my house as a laboratory. And it's much like a very large Faraday cage in which it is shielded from external EMF radiation. I never get anything in my house. I never record any voices. I never get any EVPs. I never record anything there. But there's nothing associated with any kind of activity in my home. So a lot of my base readings, when I design a piece of apparatus in order to test something, I test in that lab because it's a very controlled environment. Now, when we go to a place that has reported activity, we are more likely to pick up an EVP than we would be, you know, in a place that doesn't have it. And I've talked to people who claim that they can pick up EVPs everywhere they go, and I'm a little dubious of that, but I don't think they're actually picking up EVPs.
I've also heard that you don't want to do it in your home because if you put the recorder down and you start inviting spirits into your house and da-da-da-da-da, you never know what's going to go through, you know?
Well, that's a bit of the superstition and folklore creeping in there, but...
All right. Okay, well, you know, sometimes I tend to be maybe too left-brained, I guess, but I have to ask those questions. It's
well,
that simple.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, but as a researcher, I have to take the stance that these things are unproven concepts, and I have to look at it like I don't know what it is, and I can't assume what it is. So it has to identify itself to me as to what it is. Well, and I can say that the only compelling proof of life after death that EVP offers isn't so much the spontaneous nature of it appearing, where does it come from, but the actual content of that EVP, which is very anecdotal as far as evidence goes. So it's very important and vital to understand where this EVP is physically originating from, where it's coming from, and how it gets to us, how we're actually receiving it.
Right. But Jack, David, did you have a comment?
Yes. Could it be, and I've long felt, these people who are recording pure EVPs, could this be something impressed upon the device by the mind of the experimenter?
There have been some experiments that have been done on this, and they've been inconclusive. And, of course, that's always a possibility, which is another reason why we don't invite anything in. We go, we set stuff up, and oftentimes we leave the area and leave the stuff running unattended, or we will leave it, you know, when there's no one in the area, and we control the traffic in that area so that there can't be any tampering either mentally or physically with the equipment. Because there are cases that we have gone on where the client has been searching for notoriety, and they have tampered with the evidence and tampered with the actual investigation to the point of rendering it useless. So you have to have checks and balances. You have to have safeguards. You have to be just like a criminal detective when you're gathering this stuff, and you have to guard this evidence just like it was forensic evidence.
Now, I like
the
that.
The people who have obtained recordings using Faraday cages of various types, from makeshift microwave ovens to real Faraday cages, but have yet reported these EVPs. What would you say to that, David? Is it possible to have an EMF field affecting something, a recorder that's inside a true Faraday cage?
Well, I can only make a conclusion on that based on, you know, my own experience and what I'm dealing with. And from what it looks like to me at this point, and I'll clarify that only from what it looks like to me at this point, is that this stuff is pure energy. It comes in through some type of portal or wormhole, if you will, possibly from another dimension or universe. And that area of effect is very localized. If the Faraday cage was in the throat of that opening, I would wager that you would pick up an EVP. But that's more like trying to find a needle in a haystack in reality, because the nature of this phenomena is so transitory that even when you are prepared for it and you're set up for it, you have a window of maybe 1 to 2 minutes, possibly three, where this stuff is occurring, and then it's gone. And when it leaves, there's no trace. It leaves no residual, no residue, no evidence whatsoever for what its cause or where its source was. So
right,
I would say that it would probably be possible if that Faraday cage were actually in the what I call the paranormal event horizon. It would actually do that. But the chances of you, by sheer dumb luck, placing it in the right place would be pretty astronomical.
We have some questions out of our chat room, gentlemen. We should turn to those, because otherwise the three of us are going to just question this right off the air. Angel Witch in the chat room says, do either of you use software that shows the frequencies that the sounds are recorded on?
Yes, I actually use a whole plethora of software, both for the collection and the analysis. And we also use instrumentations that allow us to view those waveforms in real time. So, yes, we do. The particular software I use in the gathering is called Sony SoundForge. It's a professional-level audio editing software.
David, let me ask you this. We had one member of a team who said that the EVPs are in a different frequency range than human speech, that they're all above 5,000 rather than, you know, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it's poppycock. Yeah. If it was above 5,000, we wouldn't be able to hear it.
Yeah.
That's right.
So what do your investigations show that? Is it the same range as human speech, or what do you find?
Well, first, my early experiments had to do with separating EVP from sound altogether. Because the fact that we don't hear it, but yet recorders pick it up, there was something at work there. So I used a bell jar experiment where I actually put a microphone inside a bell jar, evacuated the air, and you couldn't hear anything. And yet we captured an EVP. And another thing that we have done is we have used a mixer and a recorder setup where we actually use a dynamic mic on one channel panned far to the left, and then we use a condenser microphone on the other channel and pan it far to the right. The EVPs will show up on the dynamic microphone, but not on the condenser microphone. So what this indicates is that it has to be electromagnetic in nature, because the dynamic microphone actually has a voice coil, a magnet. It works off of creating an electromagnetic field from sound pressure moving the diaphragm. In a condenser microphone, it's a change in capacitance that causes it, and we don't get the EVP from a condenser microphone. Okay. Now, there's another phenomenon that occurs that we capture occasionally, which is audible. You actually hear something occurring, but that's a different phenomenon altogether. That is actually a sound, and that sound is, the interesting thing about that is there has to be some mass available to create that sound. So somewhere there is some kind of physical manifestation that's sufficient enough to generate that sound.
All right, gentlemen, we're running out of time here. David, tell everybody how they can find out more about you, what your website is.
Visit my website. It's www.spininvestigations.org. That's like SP Investigations, one word, .org.
Okay, and you, Jack, your website?
Very simple, johnlturner.com.
Okay, excellent. You know, we could go on and on and on, and I have to apologize to everybody out there that had questions that we couldn't get on the air. This is a very interesting subject, and I think we've had a lot of fun. We have some additional clips that are at the website that you'll be able to listen to that are David's clips that he has recorded in the process that he's described here today. And I invite you all to go there and listen, because when you put the headphones on and do, they get a lot closer. All right. I want to invite you all to join us again next week, when Dr. Turner will be here again with Rosemary Guiley and George Nuri, host of Coast to Coast. You want to make that show, because we'll be talking about out-of-body experiences and, once again, the afterlife. Thank you, Dr. Turner. Thank you very, very much, both of you, for being here today.